The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink it and criminalize
of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it. All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. We made it to the weekend. It is Friday, April 5th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. It's also got to be a full house here at Rolla J Studios. We got plenty of people hanging out. Cousin Kenny is here. We got Bacon Dan, and a new guest, Stevie, is in the house, as well as our own Brian Red. How you doing, Brian?
Doing good. We got lots of guests. Going to be a lot of fun today and tonight on the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour.
That's
we got
right.
Even more guests rolling in.
Yeah, Adam Hand's coming in, Nick's coming in, Bacon Dan's going to give us a hockey report, maybe Kenny will update us on NASCAR, who knows, it's a crazy party tonight, and Bobby Black from High Times Magazine will be on the show tonight for the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour, so make sure you stick around for that. Ooh. Before we get all to that, though, we've got a full show for today, a full 2 hours to give you. We're going to start off with our 420 radio news. We got some updates on some of the states that are trying to pass various legislation for marijuana. We've got an update from the Massachusetts Supreme Court on their decrim, Kansas on drug testing for welfare, Colorado on marijuana DUI bills, and Maryland on medical marijuana. Plus, a little bit of sports. We're going to take a look at Auburn University and their hidden synthetic pot drug tests. They didn't tell anyone about them. This could affect their national championship from 2010. We'll talk about that. Also, in our Behind the Headlines segment today, I've been waiting since the Pew Research poll came out yesterday showing 52% support for marijuana legal in America. I've been waiting for a reply from just one person, Kevin Sabet, and we've got the reply today. I will tell you the reply, and of course we'll poke it with a stick and see what happens. Then we've got a special guest coming up on our show tonight. Half past, we've got Andrea Herman. She's with the Hemp Industries Association. She's going to tell us all about hemp and Hemp History Week, which is coming up. We've got Herb Thrasher calling in for our Rockin' Friday. We got great music, a video actually, from the FNAs out of Dallas, Texas, with whom I'll be going on tour this summer, spreading the word for legalization all across the Southwest. And at the end of the show, time for a radical rant. We're looking at the state of Mississippi, where prosecutors there are trying to get their Supreme Court to take up the case of prosecuting a woman for manslaughter because she had a stillborn infant and was using drugs. Now, we don't know what drugs were in the story, but we're going to tell you why that is a horrible idea for the kids and for the parents. All that and more coming up in hour two. Toker Talk Radio will take your calls at 971-533-7111. Hey, this is the Russ Belville Show. Welcome to the weekend. We're going to have a good one.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Now it's time for your 420 Radio News for Friday, April 5th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Sharing marijuana joints legal, but growing pot is still a crime. This from CBS Boston. The Massachusetts State Supreme Judicial Court has ruled that sharing a marijuana cigarette is not a crime under the law that decriminalized possession of less than an ounce of the drug, but cultivation is illegal. The High Court handed down four rulings Friday that seek to clarify the law that decriminalized possession of less than an ounce of marijuana for personal use. Voters approved decriminalization of the drug in 2008. In the marijuana cigarette case, the court ruled that sharing a joint does not constitute distribution and is protected conduct under the decriminalization law. The case involved a man who was arrested for sharing a joint at the annual Hemp Fest on the Boston Common. The state argued the man was distributing the drug. In two of the other cases, both of which involved guns seized during traffic stops, the court found that charges stemming from vehicle searches following the discovery of a small amount of marijuana should be thrown out, because possession of an ounce or less of the drug is a civil infraction, not a crime. Welfare drug testing bill headed to Governor Brownback's desk. This from KansasCity.com. It's up to Kansas Governor Sam Brownback whether the state will require drug tests of welfare and unemployment recipients suspected of using illegal substances. The Senate on Tuesday voted 29-9 to forward Senate Bill 149 to Brownback's desk. It allows the state to require drug tests whenever there is a reasonable suspicion that someone getting welfare or unemployment benefits is using drugs. That could be triggered by someone's demeanor, missed meetings, police records, or if they fail tests with a prospective employer. Those who fail would temporarily lose their benefits and have to attend drug treatment and job training courses paid for by federal and state funds. Brownback has declined to say in recent months whether he favors the bill. Under the bill, the Department for Children and Families would have to set up a testing program by the start of next year to test those who receive temporary assistance for needy families, commonly known as welfare. DCF says it will have to hire four more full-time workers for the testing at $248,000 a year, along with computer upgrades and other changes to track testing that would exceed $500,000. Colorado House passes marijuana DUI bill from Yahoo News. The Colorado House of Representatives voted on Friday to approve a bill that establishes limits for people driving under the influence of marijuana. It was the third consecutive year that the bill's co-sponsor, House Minority Leader Mark Waller from Colorado Springs, has put forth such a bill in a state that approved medicinal marijuana years ago and last November also approved marijuana for recreational use. Some of the details. The Colorado House GOP stated that House Bill 1114 works similar to blood alcohol limits for drunk drivers, setting a limit of 5 or more nanograms of Delta-9 THC present in a milliliter of whole blood for a driver to be considered under the influence of marijuana. However, according to the bill, a driver who reaches the 5 nanogram limit can argue in court that he or she is unimpaired because of tolerance, size, or other contributing factors, the House GOP stated. This permissive inference addresses a concern of medical marijuana users who are chronically above the 5 nanogram limit, but function as if sober. Maryland Senate will soon vote on medical marijuana bill from CBS Baltimore. The General Assembly is winding down with just 3 days left before it adjourns. The Senate vote on medicinal marijuana was expected Thursday night, but delayed until Friday. This year's medical marijuana bill cleared a major hurdle when the House voted 108-28 to pass it. Report, Auburn kept failed test for synthetic drugs secret from USAtoday.com. At least a dozen members of Auburn's 2010 championship team tested positive for synthetic marijuana, known popularly as spice, and the university decided to keep the results secret, according to an ESPN report. According to the report, a dozen student-athletes on Auburn's 2010 team, including running back Michael Dyer, tested positive for the drug. Because the school did not begin testing for synthetic marijuana until after the season was over, the investigation found that as many as another 12 seniors on the team used the drug, but were never caught before exhausting their eligibility. ESPN's investigation highlights Coach Chizik and the athletic director Jay Jacobs' decision to keep the news of the multiple failed drug tests secret even from the parents of the players in question. These latest allegations of misconduct within Auburn's football program come one day after several ex-players described instances of grade tampering, cash payments, and recruiting violations in a story by former New York Times and Sports Illustrated columnist Selena Roberts. The Tigers beat Oregon 22-19 to win the national title in 2010. That's your 420 Radio News for Friday, April 5th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at the Pew Research poll showing 52% support for legalization and the response from Project Sam and Kevin Sabet. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
From the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, home of the famous lighter leash. Herb Age Designs, get your Herb Age t-shirts and hoodies and show your pride. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter. We'll see you at this year's Hemp Fest. Crank it up!
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And in today's segment, we're taking a look at the Pew Research poll that showed 52% support nationwide for marijuana legalization. We went over this in the Radical Rant yesterday, and if you want to get more details, you can go back to 420radio.org and check our archives. The rants, the behind the headlines, and the news segments are now all separate videos. You can download them on youtube.com/radicalruss as well. The response I've been waiting for, of course, has been from Kevin Sabet in Project Sam. Been waiting to see what they had to say about this because, of course, Kevin Sabet, for those of you who don't know, is probably the leading spokesperson for the Stop This Marijuana Legalization Train effort. And he posted yesterday Sam's statement on Pew Poll on marijuana legalization. And I'll just read it to you in its entirety. It's not very long. This is what they think about 52% of Americans supporting marijuana legalization. Quote, "It is an indication, more than anything, of the careless discussion about legalization currently going on in this country. That discussion is being funded with millions of dollars from those who will profit off of legalization, marijuana's version of big tobacco, as they consistently downplay the harmful effects of marijuana. We owe it to ourselves to have a careful dialogue about the possible downsides of the legalization of marijuana, which includes health care costs, car accidents, mental illness, learning dysfunctions, and addiction. I'd like to know how many supporters in that poll realize that marijuana is at least 5 times stronger than it was 20 to 30 years ago, that it is related to emergency room admissions, poor learning outcomes for kids, and car crashes." All right, so that's a statement. And the first thing that caught my eye on this, as it usually does, is this well-funded marijuana legalization lobby, funded with millions and millions of dollars from big marijuana. Can I get some of that? Can we kick down a little here? Well-funded lobby? I got some rent to pay. But I wanted to just address a few of these things on this, because first of all, not only did this poll show 52% support for marijuana legalization, it showed a change from the poll they did in March of 2010 to the poll they did in March of 2013, a change over 3 years of 11 points in support. It went from 41% support to 52% support. And in every single demographic, men, women, white, black, Hispanic, young, old, educated or not, Republican, conservative, independent, tried marijuana, haven't tried marijuana, it didn't matter. In every demographic, support for marijuana legalization went up at least 6 points. In some demographics, as high as 16 or 17 points more support in the span of just those 3 years. Now, what has happened in the span of those 3 years, of course, is we've had statewide votes on marijuana legalization. I've told you for a long time that as long as we're talking about it, we're winning. And we put it on the ballot, even when it fails, we're winning. And if you look back to Prop 19 in California in 2010, and then in 2012, we had Oregon's Measure 80, Washington's I-502, and Colorado's Amendment 64, combined amongst all four state campaigns, a total of about $12.5 million was spent. $12.5 million. About half of that was Washington's I-502. Amendment 64 passed with about $1.8 million in campaign contributions. Prop 19 had about $4 million, and Measure 80, we were chronically underfunded. We had less than $500,000 and still got 46.5% support for legalizing as much marijuana as you want, anywhere you want, anytime you want, for any reason you want. Okay, so yeah, we're doing a hell of a job with our output when $12.5 million gets us two out of four winning elections, doesn't it? Now, compare this to the budgets of the ONDCP. With the ONDCP, going back to 1998, they had the Youth Anti-Drug Media Campaign, which originally appropriated for fiscal years 1998 through 2004 a total of $1.2 billion. That's right, with a B, $1.2 billion over that time. And you remember the ads that came out, the cartoon alien will take your girlfriend and your dog will be upset at you if you smoke pot. You remember all those ads, the, you know, your egg in the frying pan and, you know, destroying the dishes and all of those ads, which were shown by studies to not work. And in fact, in some demographics of kids, actually get more of them to want to try drugs. $1.2 billion they've spent on these advertising programs. Now, their current budget isn't quite that much. It's down to $20 million. So compare the ONDCP, which has spent as much as $1.2 billion. And remember, when they were spending that money, there was a big scandal in the early 2000s where some of that money was being spent to surreptitiously input ONDCP propaganda into news programs, into shows like ER, into ESPN Sports Center. Yeah, this is so with all of that propaganda, the power of the federal government spreading these lies, you know, throughout our news media, for some reason, they can't beat us when we're spending 1% of what they're spending on ad dollars. We've spent $12.5 million. They've spent $1.2 billion. And they can't beat a bunch of stoners? God, that's got to hurt, Kevin, doesn't it? That's really got to hurt. And the other thing that's really got to hurt is the fact that now we've got two states where marijuana is legal means there are 12 million Americans living somewhere where there's absolutely no punishment for their use of marijuana. And what a terrible example that provides to the other 48 states where people, there's 26.1 million adults who are smoking marijuana this year who look to their friends in Seattle and Denver and say, well, if they're not getting tested, if they're not getting tickets, if they're not going to jail, why should we? And that's what Project Sam is really fearing here. Not the health care costs of marijuana legalization, which, by the way, health care costs per cannabis user per year is about $20. They're not really worried about the possibility of people wrecking on the freeways when our freeways now are safer than they have ever been, despite the fact that we now have 18 states where medical marijuana is legal and more people admitting to using marijuana. They're not worried about the children, because if they were really worried about the children, they would be trying to card them, trying to put the marijuana behind counters where it can't be accessed by the children if they were really, really worried about it. No, they're only really worried about one thing: ending that revolving door, that pipeline from the courts to the prisons to the rehab centers to the drug testing industries. And Kevin Sabet, I ain't going nowhere. Besides, I got weed.
Damn right we do. And some hash today.
Hash too? All right. Hey, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we'll have Herb Thrasher on the line and some music from the F&A's.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The High Times Cannabis Cup in Amsterdam is recognized as the world's premier marijuana competition. Over the years, thousands of judges have attended the Cannabis Cup, sampling the best indicas, best sativas, best hybrids, and the best hash on the planet. In the April 2013 issue of High Times, read all about the sensational 25th Cannabis Cup that took place in November. Find out about the latest killer strains. Decide what to grow in your garden this year. Celebrate 25 years of the Cannabis Cup in this very special issue of High Times magazine. On sale now.
Oh yeah, this is Big Daddy, and I want you to join me every Thursday night at the Funky Roller Rink, baby.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Rockin' Friday, featuring rock, metal, and the hard edge of alternative country. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time to rock with Herb Thrasher. And looking at today's song, we got Bacon Dan in the house. And so today's song, the title makes perfect sense. How you doing, Herb?
Hey, and that does make perfect sense. It takes us back to those voodoo maple bar donuts, doesn't it?
Hell to the yeah. We love that stuff. Hey, this is, by the way, for folks listening, we should mention this more often, but this is Tommy Niemeyer and The Accused with this Green Eye Lady cut, and I want to thank Tommy and The Accused for donating so much of their talent to us.
Oh, man, they were great. A couple years ago, we needed some tunage, and he just put it out and told us to do whatever we wanted with it and has never looked back, and totally gave us a whole new element to the music and the sound that we have for Herb Thrasher Flower and a lot of the bed sounds that's going on. So yeah, man, another great night on Herb Thrasher Flower tonight. Really, really excited to have Bobby Black from High Times on first hour. I can talk to Bobby Black for 2 hours.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a matter of how much time he's going to give us. But we got some great topics tonight. High Times has decided to be leaders, and they've just announced that of a boycott plan against Discovery Channel Weed Wednesdays. We're going to ask them about that. And update on South by Southwest. Tons of bands go to Austin, and he was there. High Times has their own stage, so we're going to talk to him about that. And they also have the Doobie Awards, and Bobby Black's been doing that for years now. And we're going to talk about the winners, and that takes us to our Rockin' Friday song today, which is one of the winners in a band that you know very, very well from Dallas, Texas, is the F&A's. And these guys, badass band. They've got so much going on in there. It's hard to really describe them, but they got a lot of funk, man, rock and reggae, a lot of Irish kind of style, and big band, you know, a lot of horns, and just great sounds. They do so much for the cannabis community. They're real good friends with the Dallas-Fort Worth Normal chapter, And they just have a great vibe. And so congratulations to those guys goes out. I mean, they've been working so hard, and now they're starting to get a little bit acknowledged. And as you guys keep paying attention to the Russ Bevel Show and Thrasher Show, you'll hear that Russ has big plans with these guys this summer. So we'll be talking about that throughout the shows. But he's going to go on tour with them maybe 4 or 5 weeks. Not sure of the details yet, but he'll be giving that to you. And we're just glad to play their song, welcome them. We're going to have in studio tonight for Hour 2, Nick Valdez from Cascadia Concentrates and Adam Han from Handmade and Bacon Dan, and we're just going to have a great time. So you guys join us tonight for the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour at 8 o'clock and enjoy this great tune right here from the Epinays. Sounds like Ozel Motley, Slightly Stupid, all in that realm. They have a great Facebook page. They're on Twitter, and you guys follow these guys, turn them up, and stay safe out there, folks.
All right, here it is, the Epinays. With Donut, performed live at Haley's Club.
To the front and we jump to the back. How you gonna feel when you act like that? Tell me what you do, cause you're doing good. Doing what you want, cause you know you should. Listen to the microphone, me do anything, me do it right. Me want to party hard, you want to party here tonight. And we can do this thing because it's feeling kinda tight. And do what you do, cause it go out of sight. Everybody gon' gather round. Hear the music is going down. Do what you do, cause you know you're found. Here at the Donut Shop, yeah! Looking good and you seem real fine. All I want to do is to make you mine. Come on over here, let me tell you so. Tell you what I want and you want to know. Me want to love you now, me want to love you all the time. And feeling what I'm feeling, baby, gonna make your mind. Come on and hold me tight, I and I will be fine. We do what we do, cause we do it quite kind. Everybody gon' gather round. Hear the music is going down. Do what you do, cause you know you're found. Here at the Donut Shop, yeah.
Yeah, I watch MTV all the time. They have the Rock Against Drug commercials, that whole campaign. These guys have, like, you know, slid into fucking school buses and killed 20 children. Yeah. Rather than face a license, they made a public service announcement. Yeah, no shit. Yeah. I love these guys that are like, hello, listen, don't get caught with drugs or you'll have to do a commercial just like this one. I think I found the message. The message is don't get caught. Rock Against Drugs. What a fucking name. Somebody was high when they came up with this title. Yeah. It's like Christians Against Christ. Rock created drugs. What are they talking about? They go together, folks.
There is peaceful solution called a peace revolution. And now let's take back America.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Like millions of freedom-loving Americans, I'm a marijuana smoker, and I don't think that that should be any of the government's business. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. The next time you light up, take the time to let your elected officials know how you feel. It's time we legalize marijuana and stop treating marijuana smokers like criminals. For more information on how you can help legalize marijuana, please contact Normal at NORML.org.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
Welcome back, everyone. 31 after the hour, and I'm really excited to get to our next topic, which is Hemp History Week. This is something we've talked about in the past couple of years on the show. It's coming up again in June, and we've got a spokesperson from the Hemp Industries Association. Andrea Herman is with us. Andrea, welcome to the show.
Hi, Russ. Welcome. Thank you.
Oh, so glad to have you here because, you know, I often tell people that I know a lot about the science of cannabis, but once it hits the dirt, I start to lose track of what's going on, and I'm glad to have an expert here to talk to us. First of all, let's just tell people about Hemp History Week. I think they can find it at hemphistoryweek.com, and it's coming up in June. What do they need to know?
Yeah, so basically this is our fourth annual Hemp History Week. It is June 3rd through 9th, and it's an industry-wide project initiated by the Hemp Industry Associations and Vote Hemp, and it involved hundreds of hemp manufacturers, farmers, activists, volunteers, and retailers all across the United States.
It's really exciting. People need to know more about the economic and industrial potentials of cannabis as used as a hemp crop. And one of the things I saw in some of your materials that really spoke to me is the theme of the campaign, Hemp, Our Heritage, Our Future, because I've always characterized this as something that is American heritage. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yes, exactly. You know, industrial hemp has been a long staple crop in the United States up until the 1930s. The last crop was actually in the early 50s. So it is something that is part of our heritage, and it is going to be something that's part of our future. And we've seen this, you know, exactly play out in Canada, where it was part of the Canadian heritage. That heritage started to get lost, and the Canadian government re-recognized industrial hemp, and now it's part of the Canadian future. So this is something that can happen in the United States also.
People here in America probably recognize, at least a little better than they used to, that there are hemp products, hemp soaps and lotions. And even for those that might go to some of the summer festivals, they'll find a hemp backpack or wallet or something like that. But I don't think a lot of them realize that we're having to import all of that hemp when we manufacture that. What has this done as far as the balance of trade between, say, us and Canada or China?
Well, of course, it's good for our Canadian producers, as that, you know, we have a program here that provides safe food products that are grown in sustainable ways, such as the fact that there are no registered pesticides for hemp food production in Canada. Unfortunately, the American farmer is missing out on the opportunity to be part of this 5 some odd $5 million worth of revenue that could be generated. And this is all principally right now on the food side, or as you said, on the soap side. So, you know, part of our platinum sponsors would be like Dr. Bronner's Magic Soap, Living Harvest Food, Manitoba Harvest, Nature's Path, and Nativa. These are all companies that could and would be sourcing from American farmers if they had the right to cultivate this crop.
What sort of potential, are there any good estimates as to how much this could mean to the American economy, how many farmers this could put back to work, et cetera?
Oh, yeah, well, you know, this is huge. We're right now only focusing. We haven't even started to tip the iceberg of this, of the marketing potential in the United States. As I said, right now, and you had stated, we're principally focused right now on the food and on the oil for body care applications. We haven't even started getting into the thick of things when it comes to building applications and textiles. You know, you look at a company like Enviro Textiles based out of Colorado. You know, right now they are bringing in the quality fabrics from Asia and other parts of the EU when they could be using hemp that was grown for fiber only in the United States to manufacture those textiles. Or it also opens opportunity for regional development of oil processing facilities, stock decortication facilities, to be able to be producing these raw ingredient products to sell into the market, to go into other interesting products like compostable packaging material, for instance, or a recyclable plastic, or into the paper industry.
If we could get some clamshell products made of hemp that I could actually open after I bought the thing, that would be great. I could really appreciate that. We're speaking with Andrea Herman. She's from the Hemp Industries Association and a spokesperson for Hemp History Week. It's coming up real quick. June 3rd through 9th is the fourth annual Hemp History Week. You can find out more at hemphistoryweek.com. Andrea, I was wondering, you know, maybe some of our listeners who might have more education on hemp than maybe a typical audience would, maybe know some of the basic facts about hemp and its utilization for paper and plastics and fuel and so forth. I'm wondering, over the past couple of years, have there been any dramatic new developments in hemp production that you can think of that maybe our audience might not know about?
I think that, you know, we're chucking along. We're seeing, you know, more in the composite side, which is really good to be looking at a consistent quality and grading system coming online. You can look at the Composite Innovation Center here in Manitoba. They are bringing on something called Fiber City, in which they will be able to actually look and help develop a grading system, which will be good if we want to advance that into these type of composites and high-end composite products. I think that there are a few interesting products out there. There's a really great company called Ecovates, and they're using hemp herd and mushroom mycelia to make compostable packaging material, which is really cool. But, you know, right now our principal driver is actually, you know, encouraging people to contact their congressperson and support the Industrial Hemp Farming Act of 2013, because until we have the right to cultivate this crop in the United States, some of these really inventive products and ideas and manufacturers that are out there are not going to bite at hemp because they don't think that there's going to be a consistent supply of it on an annual basis. And also right now, if we're having to bring some of these fiber materials over from our colleagues in Europe, which we appreciate our colleagues in Europe, but the freight costs more than the product costs. So how can that be economical in the long run if we're not having domestic supply?
Yeah, and it just seems logical to me that a country founded by hemp farmers ought to allow the growing of hemp.
Exactly. And I say, it's always sad, you know, one of the jobs that I do, I'm an authorized hemp crop sampler by the government here in Canada. And it's always so sad to me when I'm standing right almost on the United States border and, you know, the farmers, their kids have grown up together. They help each other with their farming. And, you know, the farmer in Canada can grow up, but the farmer in the United States can't. And they eat the same food, talk the same language, run the same equipment, watch the same television. And, you know, you look at them side by side, they're the same people. So American farmers should have the right. And the only way we're going to get that right is if our Congress people hear from their constituents. So they, you know, your listeners can go to votehemp.com, go to the action tab. It's really simple. Put in your zip code. It comes up with all of your senators, your representatives. You can send them an automatic email. There's a script for you if you want to call them and ask them to support the Industrial Hemp Farming Act.
Yeah, get involved, people. Activism starts with ACT. Go to votehemp.com because they don't have a leg to stand on here as far as opposing the hemp uses of cannabis. Drug use of cannabis, that can be controversial for some people, but when it comes to industrial hemp, I mean, we're talking about less than, what is it, 0.3% THC in industrial hemp?
Yes, in Canada and in the proposed legislation in the United States in the green plant material, and in Canada you're looking at, we regulate also the food derivatives that are created, and those are regulated at 10 parts per million THC or less.
Oh.
And, you know, that has driven us into the point to where we are right now where, you know, we know that you're not going to fail workplace drug tests and these things from consuming hemp foods because they are healthy hemp foods. And, you know, we also have right now, you know, support from the National Farmers Union. So we are starting to see these farmers come on in support of industrial hemp, which is also important because of activists. We can ask for it, but we need to also have the American farmers out there voicing their opinion.
Absolutely. And it's such a good crop for farmers. I understand really good for rotation, you know, with other crops and replenishing the soil and so forth. We've got to make that happen. So let's talk about the making it happen. The Industrial Hemp Farming Act is on the federal side. There's already, what, like 8 states that have hemp legislation. I'm in Oregon, which is one of them, and a bunch of states that are fighting for it. But it all gets caught up on this DEA permit situation. Is that what the Industrial Hemp Farming Act will address?
Yes, the Industrial Hemp Farming Act will essentially remove or amend the Controlled Substances Act to exclude non-drug industrial hemp from the definition of marijuana, and it will allow the states to regulate industrial hemp in accordance to state law.
Okay, then the states that currently have hemp legislation on the books, like Oregon or Vermont, could then start planting.
Exactly. And, you know, we've got good news today from Kentucky as the governor there is going to let the bill go into being law. We've had the action, of course, in Oregon and in Colorado. So there is a lot of interest from within the states. And I think that, you know, this becomes a states' rights issue. And we want to make sure that all those states and those that aren't, you know, quite yet, you know, involved in pushing for industrial hemp to get involved. And like I say, the only way that can happen is by picking up that phone or sending those letters.
If there's one talking point that the opponents of hemp still have, and that usually comes from someone in law enforcement, they'll try to say that, well, people that want to grow drug cannabis will hide it amongst the hemp. So we can just, you know, kill that meme right away with an expert here. Could you address that point?
Yes, essentially what would happen is that the industrial hemp would cross-pollinate your female marijuana plants, and it would decrease the THC in your marijuana plants and also give you instead of a bud, you would get a seed head. I was in over 21,000 acres of hemp, and I have been crop sampling since 2005 and have never had a case, nor have we ever had a case reported in Canada of medical or marijuana being grown inside of a hemp field.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Andrea, for you know, making that perfectly clear. It seems to me they understand this in 31 or so other countries. I don't understand why it's so tough for the U.S.
Yes, you know, and like I always say, you know, law enforcement in the United States are no different than our law enforcement here in Canada. They are, you know, intended to keep the peace, and, you know, hemp is a non-issue. And, you know, there's so many ways that people can get involved with things like Hemp History Week. You know, you can set up a table to get involved. You can connect with your local farming community. You can, you know, do a concert or an art walk. You can become a part of hosting a movie screening. And there's a complete toolkit that's available on the Hemp History Week website. You can go and look to see what events are going on in your area. Or if there's not an event, you can create an event. We've got presentations. You can put together something at your local library. You can get all kinds of nice promotional material to be able to provide to the guests that are coming and visiting you.
Oh, that sounds so good. HempHistoryWeek.com takes place June 3rd through the 9th, 2013, coming just a couple of months. Get involved, get active. Andrew Herman from Hemp Industries Association, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your expertise.
Thanks, Russ. Appreciate y'all's time.
All right, folks, when we come back, time for a radical rant. We're looking at prosecuting mothers in Mississippi. It's a sad tale.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancer, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence in suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects from medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reaction, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairments, appetite increase, and in some U.S. states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana, it's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
Respect the law, but know your rights. And share if you can.
Ask me any question, I'm gonna plead the fifth. Unless you asking me if I wanna smoke a spliff, then I'll be coming over, I'm gonna take a lift. You know I leave you feeling like you got a touch of the gift.
Yeah. Brian the Red, and you're listening to 420radio.org. So get a little airy.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
For today's rant, I got a story out of Mississippi, and but this is a story that could be told in just about every state in America with just different variations. It's a sad tale of a woman by the name of Nina Buckhalter, who was pregnant and using drugs while she was pregnant. I did as much digging on this story as I could find to find out which drug, but I could not find out. Every news report I found on it just reported her as being a drug user. Now, oftentimes in these stories, we're talking about marijuana, and they'll just call it drug user to make it more sensational. We are talking about Mississippi here, so there's that as well. But for now, we don't know. We don't know if it's a marijuana-smoking mom. We don't know if she was using meth or coke or what it might have been. The point doesn't matter, because this happens to marijuana-smoking moms all the time. Let me read from the San Francisco Gate. This is the basic rundown of the case. Prosecutors urged the Mississippi Supreme Court to allow them to pursue a manslaughter charge against a Lamar County woman whose child was stillborn and had taken drugs during her pregnancy. Nina Buckhalter suffered a stillbirth and was arrested in 2010 for culpable negligent manslaughter because of alleged drug use during her pregnancy. A local judge threw out the case in 2012. Prosecutors appealed. Assistant District Attorney Doug Miller told the justices Tuesday that state law defines an unborn child as a human being and lists crimes that can be committed against a fetus. He said while the law refers to acts of another, the mother and the unborn child are separate human beings. Circuit Judge Prentice G. Harrell threw out the case, saying the legislature did not intend to criminalize pregnant women whose drug use harms or injures an unborn fetus. Now, this is going to be a sticky situation to have to talk about, because you're talking about two very hot button moral panic issues: drug use and pregnancy, moms, fetuses. And it starts to get into, when you make decisions based on whether a mother is harming her fetus, starts to infringe, or starts to, you know, get close to those abortion rights that are also such a hot button issue in this country. But we're going to go there. We're going to take a look at this, because the problem with this kind of thinking is, once again, it's this moral panic kind of thinking. Oh my God, we don't want the children to be hurt. What about the children? The problem is, the science behind this is not there to justify what they're trying to charge here. I have a document. This is from the American Medical Association, and this is from their amicus brief in the Supreme Court case, where they're making the points that this is not a just way to handle this situation. And they point out first that, of course, we are worried about the kids, and of course, we're not endorsing non-medicinal use of drugs, including alcohol or tobacco, during pregnancy. Nevertheless, what they're trying to do in Mississippi here by prosecuting this woman would have terrible consequences on mothers, on health, on so many aspects of the judicial system. Now, here is part of their arguments against. I just wanted to bring this up. First of all, the prosecution is not substantiated by the evidence. We are trying to prosecute a woman for manslaughter based on the fact that she had a stillbirth. And they make point A here in their argument that stillbirths are a common adverse effect of pregnancy, and causes are not fully understood. And just reading from this, in Mississippi in 2011, according to the document here for the American Medical Association, there were as many as 402 reported cases of stillbirth. There may have, of course, been many, many more. A wide range of medical conditions and environmental factors are believed to contribute to stillbirth. Nevertheless, a small but significant number of pregnancies result in unexplained pregnancy loss. These inexplicable outcomes account for approximately 10 to even 50% of all stillbirth. This, according to Williams Obstetrics, a report, Gary Kenningham et al., from the American Journal of Forensic and Medical Pathology, this in 2001. So if we're going to prosecute a woman because she was taking drugs, because that might have caused the stillbirth of her fetus, when 1 to 5 out of 10 stillbirths have no medical explanation, aren't we could be prosecuting women for just merely being the victim of the circumstance of stillbirth, and she happened to be a pot smoker. It's just rank discrimination. Indeed, many people wrongly believe, this again from the American Medical Association, many people wrongly believe that women have a high degree of control over their pregnancy outcomes. The longstanding and constant medical reality, however, is that as many as 20 to 30% of all pregnancies will end in miscarriage or stillbirth. 20 to 30% will end in miscarriage or stillbirth for no fault of anybody's. In fact, stillbirth is one of the most common adverse outcomes of pregnancy, and it occurs despite the best intentions and precautions taken by women and their doctors. So that's one of the points here, that there is no scientific basis to show that a stillbirth is anyone's fault. Many stillbirths can just happen. But point B they make in their amicus brief, science has failed to prove that in utero exposure to illegal drugs causes unique harms to a fetus. Now, we have all sorts of data on fetal alcohol syndrome. And people, as they are wont to do, will oftentimes analogize drugs and alcohol. Well, if it's bad that a woman's drinking during pregnancy, it must be as bad if she's taking drugs. We don't have the science to show that. As they write for the American Medical Association again, in spite of myths and misconceptions, science has failed to prove that in utero exposure to illegal drugs, such as methamphetamine, causes unique harms distinguishable from those caused by other uncontrollable factors. In 2005, a national expert panel reviewed published studies about the developmental effects of prenatal exposure to meth and related drugs and concluded that, quote, the data regarding illicit methamphetamine are insufficient to draw conclusions concerning developmental toxicity in humans. There's just no science behind it. Now, this is not to say go snort a rail, you know, if you're pregnant. This is not to say, you know, doing eight balls and you know, smoking opium is the right thing to do if you're pregnant. What we're saying here is you cannot show that that causes any more chance of harm to the fetus than other uncontrollable and unexplained factors. Now, in their second part, that pays attention to the fact that, you know, we can't even prove that what she did as a pregnant mom harmed her fetus. The second part is to show that prosecuting this woman under the state's manslaughter statute will harm other mothers and children. The American Medical Association writes, "The prosecution of those who suffer stillbirths will undermine the quality and accessibility of health care for many pregnant women. Every leading medical organization and governmental body to consider this issue has concluded that responding to drug use during pregnancy through criminal sanction is likely to undermine the health of pregnant women and children." This is American Medical Association's Legal Intervention During Pregnancy, Journal of the AMA, and part of their resolutions from 2001, as well as the American Psychiatric Association's Care of Pregnant and Newly Delivered Women Addicts. So every leading medical organization says punishing pregnant women for using drugs while pregnant only makes things worse for the mothers and the kids. This is true, they continue, even if the unsupported claim of harm from exposure to drugs is true, because fear of prosecution operates as a deterrent to pursuing drug treatment, prenatal care, and labor and delivery care, and discourages disclosure of critical medical information to health professionals, which anybody with half a mind can understand how this works. You're pregnant, you got a drug habit, perhaps. Knowing that you could get busted for that, knowing that you could get prosecuted for manslaughter to your child at worst, or at best have Child Protective Services come and take them away from you, is going to lead lots of mothers to want to lie about their habit, to not want to seek any help for their habit, to not want to seek any medical care whatsoever, lest the doctor find out something from a blood test or a urine test. And what good is that doing the kids who would benefit from that prenatal care? Not a whole lot. And that's what the American Medical Association continues to say. This prosecution will deter drug-dependent pregnant women from seeking health care. And more to the point for our show, we all understand that the detection of drugs in the urine is so much easier for marijuana than the other meth, coke, heroin, all the other drugs out there. And while we still don't have the science or the data to show this, I'm willing to take a hazarded guess here that if we had a choice to what drug a woman might be using during pregnancy, perhaps marijuana would be not the first one we would want to get her away from. Let's just put it that way. So through this drug testing, through this punitive reaction to these women using drugs, we are disproportionately punishing them for marijuana use, which in a lot of cases for pregnant women, hell, we can look back at the history. We can look back at Queen Victoria, for God's sake, using cannabis to quell morning sickness, to deal with cramps, to deal with the kind of sickness you get when you're pregnant. Again, not endorsing pregnant moms to be loading up bong hits all day. But I tend to think maybe a puff or two off of a joint for a mom with morning sickness might be better than a bunch of Imodium or Pepto or any number of antiemetics they might prescribe for her that have a laundry list of side effects that go on the second page of the magazine. It's time to get sensible about this and understand that the best way of dealing with any of the negative repercussions of drug use is through education, is through understanding and treatment, not through criminal prosecution. You make the problems with marijuana worse, and you add an extra layer of prohibition problems that never would have existed in the first place. This case is Nina Buckhalter. It's State of Mississippi versus Nina Buckhalter, and we will have some links to that up on our blog at RadicalRush.com. This document from the American Medical Association, this amicus brief, one of the best things I've read on the subject. So I want to make that available to everyone out there who might be fighting this battle in your state. It's all the time we got for today. I want to thank you all for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show. Stick around, because coming up, we got all sorts of guests in the studio. We got Bacon Dan. We got Stevie. We got Cousin Kenny. We got Brian the Red. For all of them and for me, Radical Russ, thanks for joining us here from Rolla G Studios, live every weekday, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern. Join us for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, coming up next. And later on tonight, 8 o'clock, your Thrasher Flower Hour, with special guest Bobby Black from High Times. I'm Radical Russ Belville. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it.